Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com. The following programming is sponsored by Pinnacle Medical Plus. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome to a Lawyers of Ponlahaki special. We've got an awesome show. I'm excited about this particular show because I've had the opportunity, for a lot of firsts in our time, we had the opportunity to do Sharif Street and his father, the former mayor, Senator Street, and former mayor, John Street. And it was a great occasion. Both of them had been on, obviously, in the media for decades. This is a little different, but still pretty cool stuff. I'm ecstatic to bring in to the program somebody who needs no introduction in the Philadelphia region and beyond, and in our labor community, Sam Pond. Sam, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and certainly, yeah, I see the Legends of Labor plaque right there. Awesome night.
Yeah.
Just a fantastic night, and this is going to be a special show because we're going to have the opportunity to do the broadcast with yourself and your son, Dylan Pond, who, by the way, you and I... We've been talking about Dylan since he's had to be 6 years old, since we met in 2001.
Yeah.
Seems a lot taller and has a little more facial hair than I remember in the
pictures. Yeah. And he's maybe an inch taller than me and probably 8 inches taller than you, but that's another story.
Not after a couple. Wait a second. Not after a couple beers, Sam. Not after a couple.
We all get a little taller.
But it is awesome. It's so much fun. Dylan, it's great to have you. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Great to have you. And so this has been a long time coming, okay? In a sense, we are at the scenic offices of Ponlahaki. By the way, Dylan, as a young iron worker, I worked on this floor, except there was no glass there, and it was, it was in the middle of the winter and crazy stuff. I like it better where we're at right now. Sam, talk about, so Dylan's an attorney now. He's an attorney here at the firm, and worked incredibly hard. But there's a big responsibility having that last name, Pond. With great opportunity comes great responsibility. Talk about the what it's like to finally have him here at the firm. What it means to you?
Well, I mean, it's there's a lot to that. First of all, talking about iron workers, Dylan's grandfather, who he's very close to, has always been very close to, was a great grandfather and loves his grandson Dylan Pond so much. And that's Bobby Mick, as we all know. And Bobby Mick was an iron worker, worked on the Walt Whitman Bridge. So Dylan has that legacy and that background of from both families, the Pond family and the McMonagle family, of having the union background. To have Dylan here, you're right. I mean, I don't think, first of all, going back to Bobby Mick, Dylan Pond is not, I was never talking to Dylan about becoming a lawyer or his mother. This is really his life when he became 18. He got a great education at the Haverford School, went to University of Southern California, then went to Southwestern Law School, both in Los Angeles. But I think his intent was always to come back here. Dylan has been with this firm since his first year at USC. He started in, and he'll tell you the story, filing papers, and then sitting next to and interning next to Adam Goldstein, who now runs our referral business. So Dylan has almost, a decade of working at Ponlahaki, from, cleaning out the refrigerator to looking at our national referral practice, looking at the different areas that we work in. But it's a dream come true to work with your son. And I have a lot of respect for Dylan for his hard work. You know, the bar examination in Pennsylvania has become the second most difficult bar to pass that has a multi-state. And Dylan sat for it for the first time in February and finished in the top 5%. Now, he won't tell you that, and that's really something that we don't like to brag about, but he won in there. He won serious. And think about the pressure. And again, we didn't talk about this, the pressure about Dylan Pond being my son, and God forbid if he were to fail it. So, you know, he went in there and took no prisoners and accomplished that. And the entire time while he was studying for the bar, continued to work here at Pondley Hockey and contribute to different aspects of the business. So it's a dream come true. And we have a great executive team. Dylan knows our executive team, whether it's Sean Lee Hockey, Brian Riley, who you know is our CFO, Adam Goldstein, works closely with Tom Giordano, who is in, you know, right at the rubber meets the road in running this large firm that provides services, professional services for the folks in our region and nationally. And, you know, that kind of relationship and knowing for me that we have the next generation really engaged.
Absolutely. Dylan, at what point did this become a dream for you and a possibility?
Well, just to add on a little bit about what Sam said,
Sam.
We're on air, we got it.
When I was growing up, people would ask me what you wanted to be, and I would say I want to be anything but a lawyer. So I was really not trying to be a lawyer. But once you realize that something like Pondley Hockey that your father created that helps people in your community, that you see these people being helped, and realizing that you can become a part of that and what that means, really changed when I was older and realized this.
Well, it's interesting because my father was a union official. I was in the union. Okay, and I was talking to you about your father, about the, and I've said this a lot. So I get, as you can imagine, there are so many people that come to me on a daily basis, and they're like, "Oh, yo, I'm going to get in with the unions. Good luck. You know, it's not a part time." Okay, and I had a father who was a laborer. Your dad knew him well, and he was a perfect example of okay. I never had to think of hypotheticals if in a lot of situations, but I saw also what he went through, and I was like the same as you. I'm like, you know what? Even though I was a member of the union, the last thing I'm going to do is become a union official. Okay? You see that process. And, of course, now I do the labor show. And thanks to your father, we have a labor show. But we've been doing it for 9 years. And it's a huge part of my life. I didn't exactly go in his direction. But as you do learn and as you see what your father created, I mean, at the same time, you know, where the rubber meets the road is helping people.
Sure. And I think that was one of the reasons why I didn't want to become a lawyer originally, because I saw how much time my dad had to spend. I mean, he was getting calls 24/7, 7 days a week, seeing that. And that was eating up a little bit of the time I had with him, but he was always there for me, and my mom always made sure that we were getting the attention we deserve as well, because when you're working as a workers' compensation lawyer or a personal injury lawyer, these people need help, and they need help 24/7, and you have to be there for them if you want to be a competent, good attorney.
And Sam, we've talked about it a lot, but you know, growing up like you did in the neighborhood. By the way, at the Hall of Fame, I had the opportunity to meet your boys. Those guys, thick as thieves, man. I mean, they were the first guys there 2 hours early, and it's almost like you're on the corner, but. You know, you still have, you know, that is still a huge part of who you are. Obviously, you know, you go to bat for individuals who are in the workplace every day. And talk about, you know, your upbringing and how those qualities still stick with you today.
Yeah, you know, I brought Dylan to the, I'll say the neighborhood corner dinners that we had every 6 months when he was a very young guy, you know, 13, 14 years old. He would come to the saloon or the Northeast Philly restaurant that we would meet, and he would hear the stories. But I wanted him to understand the values and the culture and the camaraderie and the brotherhood that we had in having each other's backs. And that those friendships and that caring and that love would continue on. That's very, very important. I wouldn't give up anything for where I was raised. And also, that, I think, and Dylan can speak for himself. He's very capable and competent to do that. You know, Dylan went in, he went to the Haverford School, but he came into Philly on his own and wanted to go and, you know, box in a Philadelphia gym. And I think that that's part of our heritage, at least our family. Both sides of our family were in the boxing area. You know, my wife's family and Bobby Mick and his brother was a professional, and Franny and Moose and all those guys. And, you know, obviously my dad did a little amateur boxing. But that was part of it. That became part of the Philadelphia, you know, understanding. And I think that the Philadelphia gym is a great example, a great illustration of what it means to be a Philadelphian. You walk in there, you keep your mouth shut, you earn people's respect, you work hard, you learn how to defend yourself. And Dylan came in and went to Johann's, became very friendly, and still got friends and just met with Malik and, you know, Mikey Farah and who was the Jesse Hart, you were close with as a super middleweight, and then took that out to Pacquiao's gym and did a little training out there. So those type of things, I think those qualities about being a Philadelphian,
that's right,
are extremely, extremely important. And when you take that mindset,
yeah,
in regard to dealing with our clients and to dealing with other people and to fighting for people, you know, those values, I think, transcend and resonate throughout what we do here at Pondley Hockey.
It's a great point, Sam. And you see that college commercial where you see all the athletes playing, and then the announcer goes, "Well, there, you know, of all the 50,000 college athletes, 99.9% of them are going to go pro in something other than the sport that they're playing." You make a great point in regards to those intangibles. By the way, you start talking about the Philadelphia gyms. They've said that, you know, that one of the reasons why some people don't ever make it to the heavyweight, because they can't, you know, making it out of the gym is hard enough, right? They get in those wars, you know, the scars sometimes stick with you. But Dylan, let's talk about your dad, you know, the grit, okay, the Philadelphia mentality, and how that impacts you as a professional. Okay, I said to my high school football coach during a really trying time one time, "Coach, you know those gassers, okay, that we ran in high school? Well, they're coming in handy right about now." How do you take that? Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to jump in because Dylan doesn't realize this, but Dylan was at the Blue Horizon with your father,
yeah,
I was very close with.
Yeah.
And your father and I had many, many days where we spoke for hours up at his office.
Birds of a feather.
So he was at that fight with your father. It's a shame he didn't get to meet him, but he wasn't sitting far from your dad, believe it or not.
Well, my dad said to me, you know, when Sam and I started to become close, he goes, "Sam Pond," he goes, "man, he's a hell of a fighter, right?" And my old man was a street fighter. I mean, flat out. We never had alcohol in our house, not ever. But on the weekends or after a union meeting, there would be blood on occasion, you know. It was crazy, but I knew if he said it, he was not joking around. Talk about those, you know, first of all, those lessons of grit, of being a real person.
I mean, I think coming from the heritage that I come from, growing up in Delaware County, living Philadelphia, I think that's something that can never be taken away from me. And it's been so much to my advantage, especially from going out to California for almost 8 years, living out there, starting my career out there. It's been... there is no word to describe how beneficial that has been, to have that grit, that competitive nature, hardworking, the fight. I mean, with what we do, we're going after insurance companies, and it's a fight with the adjusters trying to get more money for our clients. It's always a fight. And I think it kind of goes back to the thing, we take care of everyone in Pennsylvania. We take care of all the workers in Pennsylvania. But there's so many other states where workers aren't getting adequately taken care of because their lawyers there don't have that kind of fight. And we can step in and really help out there and take what we're taking, our values from Philadelphia.
It's interesting because knowing you, Sam, and I'll never forget years ago when I was saying that to Dylan, part of that whole thing in labor, your heritage in labor, when I say, when people come up to me, and there have been a few that are not, they're not wet behind the ears, but they say, well, I want to, can you get me in with the unions or something like that? I'm like, listen, you ought to, you know, meet Sam Pond, because when he got in, and remember when you got in my business network and we had that, we had all kinds of people in that network, but nobody was as driven and as you know, literally as he's got as many contacts easily as I do. I mean, we have the same relationships and the same respect. But I guess what I'm also saying, Dylan, is that because you're Sam's son, and it's been awesome to finally meet. I've felt like I've known you my whole life, or your whole life. But you would never think that Sam Pond's son felt like, you know, there would be a tendency for some people to think they were born on third base. That would be the surprise of the entire, you know what I mean? And because of those qualities that you were growing up. Let's talk about who was a stricter parent?
Oh, I mean, without a doubt, Sam, by far.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I mean, I didn't want to cross that road if I didn't have to. high school years were... They were a challenge. So
well,
it got a few fights.
By the way, you and I, even though there were a couple years between us, we have a lot in common there. My father, we used to call him the Big Hand, right? That's what we used to call him. And my mother, although, you know, she created the Caddy Nine Tail for us, yeah. You know, my brother was tied to a pole. that respect, okay, and you know, obviously growing up. Okay, and you learn what a man is. Like, yeah. In other words, the one thing about having a father, and I love your dad. I mean, and he knows how I feel about his success and how even proud I am of it. But when you look at it, and you have a role model like your dad, once you get past the kids stuff and, you know, and all that, your dad and all your, you know, you don't want to tick them off, but when you see how hard he's worked, okay, and how many people he's helped, okay, that role model, you have a benchmark.
Sure.
That benchmark will never be breached by you. Now you have I'm not gonna say grateful, but you have Sam Pond there with you who wants to succeed. And he wants you to succeed, but talk about that benchmark, and you know, have it being something that innately you will never breach.
Sure, I mean, I think I'm thankful. I'm thankful for it. I mean, look, there's other ways in which one can make a name for himself.
Oh yeah,
and absolutely. I think my father has done more for our family than anyone could have ever imagined.
Right.
But I think to be able to see that and for the last 10 years work closely with him and to have that kind of be, that's my father and I can work with him. I can ask questions. I have a great relationship with him and that learning experience that I can have. And also, I mean, there's a lot of room to grow for Pondley Hockey. We have made a very good name for ourselves in Pennsylvania. We just haven't made a name for ourselves on the nationwide scale.
Well, except on a Social Security disability, but
yeah. But I think what first of all, I think with Dylan, without really having to say a lot, because Dylan's a great listener and a great observer, is Dylan has observed and listened and ingrained. You know, he lives and breathes client first values,
oh, yeah.
Dealing, addressing the client's teamwork. What's going well? I actually think that Dylan Pond will take the Pondley Hockey brand along with Shawnee Hockey to a level that I was never able to do.
Okay.
So I actually think that they'll deliver Pondley Hockey quality professional services with the Philadelphia edge to more people than I've ever been able to do.
Well, it's interesting because as I was putting this together. And it was a question for your father, but it was in regards to you. Following in your footsteps or forging a new path?
Oh, I think it's a great question, Joe. I think that's exactly it. I think to a certain degree, learning from my footsteps, but definitely forging a new path. There's no doubt about it. Dylan's ideas, Dylan's vision, has been unique, and we've never seen anything like it, that what he's brought in regard to having us committed to investing in expanding and growing the business and delivering our services to new areas has been with a total belief in it, with a total risk-adverse mentality to really go for it, and to articulate his positions as to the why, is Dylan's a maverick. And, you know, I think that what he has to understand is a little bit, I can give a little knowledge about certain things, but Dylan is looking at everything so that we can go out and deliver what we're able to deliver. Again, I'll put that Philadelphia edge on it, because that Philadelphia edge is in litigation. You need to be able to fight and teach people and find other fighters throughout the country. I think that'll be taken to somewhere that I've never dreamed of. And it's happening. It's happening today. It's great to see. And it's a dream come true for me.
And I also think, I mean, just the knowledge, getting instilled with the knowledge of what we do, how we can help, and also just the client service, hearing, being in the backseat of the car, listening to my father talk to clients on drives. I mean, it's almost innate for me. So I have no problem ever picking up the phone with any client we have, no matter what state they are, no matter what time. If they have my phone number and they call me, I enjoy talking to the clients.
You know, it's so amazing that, you know, your passion, by the way, okay, we were into this 20 minutes and I got it, right? Which is awesome. And I'll tell you why. So many people, listen, you could stop right now and have a great life and never look back. Okay. The fact that you're becoming a visionary at this point, and you are striving. Okay. I just think it's almost like taking the baton and saying, okay, this is an awesome thing. What your father and Jerry, what they've done, and Tom and just the whole team here.
You know, Joe, I think that what the other thing that I'll just add this. I think that, first of all, Dylan's wickedly smart, like, you know, intellectually, but he's got an amazing dose of common sense, and he understands people and he can relate to people. Here's a kid at 27 years old that's been to 100 countries. And I'm not just talking about, like, easy countries. You know, he hasn't been to Australia and New Zealand. He's been, though, into, you know, I don't even know the names of these places. Bene and what else was?
Benin, Togo, and Lesotho, Eswatini.
I've been there. I actually have a house.
He's been, and he has this appreciation for the American ideal. And he has all this worldly knowledge. And by the way, when you talk about enthusiasm and passion, Dylan will call me from Africa, and what's going on with this in the practice, you know. So he's doing. We eat it, breathe it, and live it 24/7.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. It's when Friday comes around, I get sad, because I know I'm going to have the weekend and I'm not going to have as much to do. I mean, I love being here working at Pondley Hockey. I love talking to clients. I love keeping up with making sure that our clients are placed with the right firms, increasing our firm's relationships. It's fantastic.
Well, I can tell you this. I feel the same way about Friday, man. I mean, I need to be able to breathe, but I'm going to talk about something. Have there been any moments in your life? I can think of one with my father, and sometimes it's an odd situation where that moment taught you more about your dad than almost anything you can ever remember. And maybe it's a subtle moment. I'll tell you mine after you tell me yours. I know there's a million of them.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I really. There's a lot of good moments I remember.
But
one
like
time
you're talking down, about when he's on the phone with the clients or something, anything like that.
Sure. I mean,
go ahead.
The kayak story is one of the ones that when I was about 15 years old, I was out getting up to no good down the shore in Seattle City, and I saw a bunch of ambulances on our street, and I went down to the beach, and Sam had gone out kayaking that night. and two kids had got stuck in a riptide and were getting pulled out to sea. Another guy had tried to jump in to go save them. It was the evening. It was about 7, so lifeguards were off.
Wow.
Sam pulled up in the kayak, threw the life jacket to the guy who was also stuck in the riptide and was drowning. And then he pulled the two kids up on the kayak, settled them down, had the one kid hold onto the back, put the other kid on his lap, and he brought them in to the beach.
Sam.
So I remember being there talking to police, them telling me what happened, and then just saw my dad and coming off and everyone. I mean, I was proud, you know, and I kind of, for me, just wanting to help people as much as I can in real ways, personable ways like that, not just donating the money or saying on social media, oh, I'm this kind of person, I support this kind of cause or whatever. I think actually going and helping someone with your own two hands and your own presence is something that, and selfishly for me, why I like doing what we do is I like helping people. It makes me feel good.
So. It's interesting. I have one story like that where a kid by the name of Jimmy O'Neill, I'll never forget it. He had epilepsy. And where my house is right now, there used to be a store. My dad had a Harley, right? And he was out cleaning his Harley and all crazy neighborhood, the kids on the corner. It was a pretty, really blue-collar neighborhood back then in East Falls. But Jimmy had an epileptic fit and he was chewing at gumballs. And no one knew what to do. The old man jumped off his bike because there was a bunch of teenagers there. I wasn't sure if I was a teenager yet. And he reached down his throat and he took the gumball right out of his mouth, right? And I got a lot of other stories, too, that could be a little crazy. But here's my little quick little story. And it almost brings me to a tear. And you may not even remember one time I was in the nightclub business and the lawyer that I was negotiating with, his name is David Grasso. And Grasso had a big real estate company. And my dad called me up. But this has never happened before since. He said, you know, when in the union business, a lot of times contractors will do what's called double-breasted. They'll do union in the city, and in the counties they'll do non-union because it's cheaper. And the old man called me up and he said, "You know, you're becoming friendly with Grasso, right?" I said, "Yeah, U.S. Realty." And he said, "Well, look, they're a great contractor, great general contractor. They do great work, and you know, but they're doing, you know, double-breasted in the county." And this is weird. And he goes, "I can't understand why they're doing that. We can make them more money." And I said that. I don't know much about his life, but it's a lot cheaper to do non-union, okay? But I heard in his voice that he believed in his members so much that he felt like he could make them more money. And he said, "I want to just meet with David," right? It was at that moment I knew how much he believed in what he was doing. You know what I mean? It was an odd moment. And a lot of people will tell you, Dylan, that, you know, non-union's a lot cheaper. But there's a million reasons. And you're, by the way, no one knows him better than your father. But that was a moment. And I had been an iron worker for a long time. I was getting out. I was doing that. And I thought, this guy is so all in. And so with that, I could hear him thinking it. And I'm going, oh, man. You know, it was a weird moment. But it was just something that kind of talked, it told me, you know, a lot more about him that just in that moment, and it always stuck. It was a million different things, but when you look at the vision, you know, for Pond La Hockey, and it is awesome that we have Pond and La Hockey, you know, coming up. You guys, I mean, you know, it's that you're that passionate. Let's talk about that vision. You know, right now, you know, what Pond La Hockey has accomplished and the amount of people that they've helped in the process has just been, you know, it's the talk of the town. I mean, on a constant basis. I mean, the amount of, you know, the passion across. But there's two parts of that. There is workers' compensation, Social Security, disability. Okay, and where, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road. And that's, but there's also the business of law. Okay, I know a ton. I mean, Sam knows. I know a lot of lawyers, a lot of firms that started around the same time, maybe even before. And look at where we're at. Okay, that doesn't, you know, there have been, I have told stories or even said it, you can be the greatest mind, legal mind, you might really know your books. But if a tree's in the middle, you know, if a tree falls in a forest and no one knows you're there, okay, that's a, you know, I mean, there's a lot of that going on. And I've also talked to lawyers, Dylan. I've talked to one guy, it was a PI guy, and he left a big firm. He got to the door. This is the magnitude of what we're talking about. He's starting his own firm, his own shingle. Now, your dad didn't start the firm with an army, okay? He started it with a vision and you know, a partner, okay? And then this guy got to his door of his new place and turned around and went back because he was so afraid because he didn't understand the business of law, okay? First of all, Sam, in Dylan's education and what Dylan's doing, talk about, you know, educating, you know the education process. Even over the last 10 years of the law, you can see he cares so much about helping people where the rubber meets the road, but also the business of
law. Yeah, I think Dylan has his own innate ability, and I think Dylan, interestingly, as a child, now that you talk about getting to the door of your new business and walking back, when we started the new firm, after I was at a firm for 22 years and had built that from 7 people to 100 people and decided to leave in my early 50s, I did have some cold feet. And quite frankly, Dylan was in 8th grade and came back, and I was talking about, well, you know, maybe should go back. And Dylan, I remember, asked to talk to me outside and said to me, this is classic Dylan Pond. Because Dylan's about honor and respect, and just to give you an idea, he said to me, if you go back there, I don't think you should come home. And basically said to me, you've got to man up that.
Really?
And you got to go and move forward. So I had a weak moment, and I had a strong son who had just become a teenager but understood what I should be doing.
Right.
And they gave me unequivocally, with respect, that kind of almost like smack in the face and say, hey, come on, we got to move. The family's got to move forward. You got to move forward. You got to have your vision taken out. So, you know, the vision is there. And I think Dylan's really has a, as I said earlier, has a bigger, more macro, more strategic national, if not international. Dylan's now into servicing, and who can explain this himself? He's into servicing people throughout the world that have a Western-style democracy with a civil justice system that allows people that are injured to have their day in court. So he just created a relationship. It's not finalized. I think it's going to be finalized tomorrow, and he can tell you more about it in regard to our folks to the north in Canada. And, you know, he's met with a firm in London.
Sure. And I think one reason with my travels, I'm so appreciative to be an American. I mean, there's a lot of things that without actually visiting other countries, we take very for granted here, including workers' compensation, including Social Security disability, including retirement, including pensions. That just doesn't exist in most of the rest of the world. So these programs are fantastic for our society, fantastic for laborers. I mean, it was hard going to some of these countries and seeing people get injured, because once people are injured there's no safety net. If you're seriously disabled, that's it. So to be able to try to help as many countries as possible, as well as we have a big country of our own and there's still people that need help. We have a bunch of territories in the United States, in the Pacific, in the Caribbean, that also need servicing. So there's a lot of room for us to grow and room for us to help.
What about legislatively? So for not every one of those, you know, states,
sure.
You know, sometimes, you know, like one of the things about your dad.
Yep.
Okay. That has, and I've had this conversation 100 times. One of the great things, if you can look out the window right now, there's people working everywhere. But guess what? In those halls of justice in Harrisburg, he's up there fighting for workers that are injured now and that have not been injured, so that when they So when they get hurt, yep. that they have rights. Okay, talk about that because some
sure.
of these.
Sure, I mean, I know the Harrisburg, Philadelphia drive too well. I mean, I drove.
Yeah.
There's a couple summers where my job was driving my dad up to Harrisburg to the state capitol, meeting with
16 and 17,
really?
Meeting with legislators.
He had dinner with all the Republican moderates too.
Yep. So I mean, we look. This is something that the legislative lift is not an easy one. Especially in a lot of other states.
Well, a good state there is one right, you know, New Jersey, right next to us.
Yep.
We border it. You know, workers' compensation there. I'd imagine if your dad was in Jersey, our laws would be a hell of a lot
sure.
better. You know, I mean, literally speaking, we've talked about it. I taught your dad this term, so I want you to know about this. It's important. The grand bargain. He didn't know
go.
Anything about it.
yeah.
But the grand bargain, which you've taught us all 100 times on the radio, you know, is you know, in 1907 or 1908, they get, you know, we gave up our rights to sue our employer in exchange for having workers' compensation benefits. They want to keep gutting this.
Yeah.
You know, like you can have the benefits, but we want to take all your medical. That's what they
did.
We're
going to take a constitutional right to sue for damages and in exchange give you workers' comp, and then we're going to start eroding the workers' compensation benefit. So the grand bargain ended up being not much of a bargain for those that have been injured, weak, and disabled. And the problem is, Joe, that those folks are exactly that. They don't have the power of the other side. They don't have the power of the Insurance Federation. They don't have the power of the Chamber of Commerce. They don't have the power of the medical industrial complex. So, you know, that's really, we need to first of all, as a self-preservation for trial lawyers, we need to be able to be involved legislatively so that we have that insurance, so we still have our practices. But more importantly, we're the voice, us and labor. Our labor allies and the trial lawyers are the voices for the middle class and the working class. And if we go away, they will literally be kicked to the curb.
No question about it. And you've talked about even us with labor, with a lot of those terms that we've, like right to work and those, you know, paycheck protection and all those things we've talked about so many times, and how we're losing the PR battle. Okay. By the way, that
the PR battle is, I mean, even just one of the main, like I said before, I love coming to work. I mean, I love it. And for some people who also, most people, I genuinely think love what they do, at least in some aspect, or don't at least want to be at work and not be at home doing nothing. So to be able to get hurt and not be able to do what you love, or to do what you've done for the last 20 years, be with the same people you are for 20 years, now you're all stuck at home.
And dignity and not being able to provide.
You're not being able to provide. You're getting 2/3 of what you were making, if that. And you're stuck at home. You're not used to being at home, finding other things to do. No one wants to do that.
Right.
Wants to do that.
Right.
And the fact that only 10% of workers' comp claims in Pennsylvania end up getting filed is a travesty.
Let's talk about this. You know, first of all, congratulations on being a newly married man.
Thank you.
And we should have talked ahead of time, but it didn't come up. I got married when I was 20 years old, right? And I could imagine that everybody there at the wedding's gone 6 months. What do you think? I know that wasn't you, but here I am still in this, you know, 40 years later. Having said that, Sam, one of the things that you were talking about when Dylan, you know, gave you that insight when you were making the decision on what to do, and thank God you did. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the good woman behind every, you know, good man. Okay, talk about, you know, listen, my dad used to say this to me, and I've seen it so many times, when he was putting on the floor the resolution to do the new Union Hall, or A, B, and C. Like, there are so many make or break moments. So we could sit here and talk about one moment, but you and I both know that starting a new firm was one thing. And then, you know, making the decision to take it to the next level is another. And you're mortgaging and everything. Talk about having that, you know, that good woman behind you.
Well, we've been talking about the success of this firm. And the success of this firm is relying upon many, many folks. And at the heart of that is what we call her the rock, and that's Mimi Pond, my wife and Dylan's mom. She's 40 years married as of July 9th of this year. She is, in fact, she told us all a million times about our first date, which was 47 years ago yesterday.
Really?
But she clearly could not have done this without her. There's no doubt about it. And she is clearly the wind beneath my wings. I think she's the standard bearer of a wife for someone that's a professional, and the sacrifices that have to be made for your spouse. All the spouses here, men and women spouses of our attorneys, look up to her as far as what it's required and what the sacrifices that have to be made so that we can carry out our professional duty.
And in your case, Dylan, because you have a vision, and this conversation has been, you know, refreshing, and the fact that you, and like your father has said, you know, you are you know, you know, you have your own vision. You're going to take this firm to new levels. You have a vision. Talk about, you know, your wife and those conversations, and the fact that, I mean, not, you know, I'm sure you have those conversations. Does she support that and your vision of taking it to the next level?
Sure. I mean, she supports everything that we're doing here, and she also understands the time commitment that it takes to be here, and that I'm going to have to step out and take a phone call at times when probably isn't the best time to take a phone call, but I know it's important. And I know there's someone on the other end of the line who needs to talk to me. And she's very aware of that, and she understands that I can also manage it with her as well. And I think my dad and my mom did a very good job of managing both, so I could see that it was manageable. I also think my mom's a great role model to my wife when it comes to having a husband who has such a massive responsibility. Likewise, it's nice to see her and my mom both have to do it. But I mean, she takes off so much of my plate. Anything extra that she handles, so I don't have to focus on that. She's an unsung hero in many regards with what she does.
Dylan's made a lot of good choices, and he made a really good choice with Julie as his wife. And both of our wives are right now down at the Jersey Shore and in the same house. And, you know, we're lucky to have both of them. And Julie is a great addition to the family.
And having that, that partner is such an important, you know, the who lives through and you know, shares your vision for you. Let's talk about working with, you know, well, for leadership. Now, your father's about as good a leader as there is on the planet. You know that. I do. And part of leadership is not only having a vision and all, but able to inspire people.
Sure.
And, but you're a young dude coming into the firm.
Yep.
Okay. And you have, you're wise beyond your years. Okay. Talk about what it's like to come into an established, you know, an established company that is growing, and you have your own vision. Now, you've been here 10 years, but here you are, you're an attorney now, you know, and
I'm glad you say that I've been here 10 years. I think for a lot of people who aren't working in Pondley Hockey, who know me outside of Pondley Hockey, after I passed the bar, everyone assumes that I just walked into the Pondley Hockey right. door for the first time. I've been here for 8 years. Everyone I work with, I've had a long-standing relationship. I mean, especially from the executive team members, Brian and Sean, Brian Riley, our CFO, Sean Lee Hockey, our CEO. Sean Lee Hockey was one of my groomsmen in my wedding. Tom Giordano, I'm his son Marco's godfather. So, I mean, we're a very close-knit community, and we're all on the same kind of page, and I understand that I have big shoes to fill with my father, but it hasn't really been.
So I think Dylan's a natural leader. I mean, I think that Dylan's come in here and his leadership style. He's been running marketing. He's in the referral. He has his own leadership style, which I think is people follow him. You know, he's respectful. He inspires. I'm really impressed. I haven't given him any leadership courses. I just think it's him. You know, his when he leads all these different groups of his friends from, you know, Southern California to the Haverford School to the, you know, the beach community and down in the Jersey Shore, all of those communities come together. He's kind of the glue. He watches out for everybody. He's mindful of everybody. He's concerned about everybody, legitimately thinks about them, wants to give them.
What I love about what you're saying, Dylan, is, and this, and I'm hearing it when, is that you want to grow this business, but really you just want to help more people.
Sure. I mean, look, I want to help more people. I also want to grow the business. I mean, and I think those two things aren't mutually exclusive. I think what I love to say is do what's best for the client, and the money and the business, that'll all follow. That's the beauty about working on a contingency fee.
The contingency fee. Okay. That is what that and I have said this 1,000 times. I'll say it another time. That is what makes. I say this. You are not gonna. That's what makes you a hero. Where somebody walks into a room, okay, top five in the bar, okay, bar. You know, when you took the bar, if you're coming from an ironworker, people are gonna think I was talking about the actual bar. However.
Where you can get up a drink in a fight.
That's right. But ironic, you know, people can walk in and get a quality attorneys like Sam Pond. Like I have a case from an injured worker from SEPT. I don't want to forget that, even though we're on the air.
Okay.
But my point is to be able to send that person to your father, okay, which he'd be getting anyway. But the point is they get to meet Sam Pond. And my point is they could never afford a sure. Dylan Pond or a Sam Pond. But the contingency fee agreement levels the playing ground, takes to the next level, because let's remember you're dealing with people who are injured, who cannot afford this. It's a great thing.
And I think the lawyers are out there. I think, I mean, clearly, like I said before, we're clearly the best in Pennsylvania when it comes to workers' compensation. There's no doubt about it. But being able to create relationships with a firm in Oregon, and if some client came through the door that said, hey, I got hurt in a workers' compensation accident in Oregon, they somehow came to us and asked us, I could say, hey, I know the best possible firm in
Oregon.
You have
relationships.
The boutique, the three-man lawyers in Oregon, who's the number one settlement, who even though, because it's a contingency fee, you're getting the same, you're paying the same percentage at the end, one lawyer is going to get you 10 times the result as the other one, and I can steer you in that right direction.
You know, it's interesting. When I think about this conversation, I think of parallels a little bit. And I'm seeing that at this, even at this early stage, there becomes, and you've been here 10 years, so it's and so you're ingrained in what's going on here. But I remember when I wasn't there 10 years, and I remember my first day as an iron worker. What a tumultuous day that was. I mean, we can only talk about that after the show. But there comes a point. I remember I was Joe Doc's kid for a long time. And eventually, I became Joe Doc. And, you know, and that's how they know you. What's an awesome thing about what I'm seeing, you know, right now is that, and Sam, I think, you know, Dylan, you know, even though there's a, you know, your dad and the firm, it cast a shadow of as high as the highest building in the city of Philadelphia because of the success, because of all those things. Under any, how important was it for you, and is it to an extent, to forge your own path? Let's be real. You know, I mean, it's going to take a natural progression, but I can see it right now that, you know, you're Dylan Pond. You know, I mean, it's all, not too long. I mean, you're always going to be Sam Pond's son, and that's a great honor. But how important is it to forge your own reputation?
It's very important to me. But it's, I think, forging my own path in law, forging my own path in business, or forging my own path in life. I think those are very two separate things. And in business and law, my father started an amazing path. I just want to expand that path. I want to keep that path going, keep it up to the service that he provides, make sure that the reputation he created passes down to me and I maintain that same kind of reputation and esteem. But my path in real, in my personal life, that's one that I want to focus more on forging myself. And I do that with a lot of my travels and other ways that I can find to forge my own name that will be passed down.
What kind of husband do you want to be?
What kind of husband do I want to be? I mean, a good husband. but that's a harder question. I mean, a strong husband, that's really just, it's all about, for me, just supporting my family, my wife, future kids, and just understanding that I'll be there for them no matter what and kind of have the same kind of presence that my father did in my life.
Sam, when you hear Dylan, you know, how, you know, I mean, he's, let's talk about Mike, he's not here, right? but, you know, having, just exuding what he's exuding and don't take this, at his young age, 27 years old, you know, beyond his years, talk about that, but also talk about what you want for him, because he's your son. And you built an amazing thing here, and your son has the capabilities to drive the machine and to be a part of it and all those things. But what do you want for him?
Well, I mean, I want happiness for him, you know, and a full life and being engaged in life and living life, you know, and taking all the opportunities and really enjoying the ride of life and being, you know, a good person. Dylan's been amazing as a son. You know, you've got a great blessing. His mother did a hell of a job. But we've all, from a very early age, we talk about family and the importance of family. And he's a great husband. He'll be a great father, and he's a great friend. And we want him. And he's a great professional. And he's going to be a great businessman. And he's going to help the community. And he's got everything. But Dylan's life is Dylan's life. You know, we taught him to be honest from an early age. We told him about having integrity. We told him to be the responsibility and the duty of having a position in life. But he has his own life. I don't tell him how to live his life. If I think that he's, you know, not doing something here that I think he can do better, then he knows I'll tell him that. And if he thinks I can do something, we're at the point now where we can do that. I don't think either of us take ourselves too seriously, though, either. I think we're just, you know, part of the team, and we both have great sense of humor. We joke about it. He's got a great sense of humor. He's a practical joker all the time, so he doesn't take, I think he's very serious about the work, but he doesn't take himself that serious. I think we're just other people showing up, doing a job, doing our best. You know, Dylan is an interesting guy. You know, when he fought his first, going back to the gym, I remember when he did 9 rounds of sparring after Danny Davis had him do, you know, 4 weeks of training and he did 2 hours a day. And we went out to dinner. I just happened to be in Joe Hands that time. And I remember sitting down with him. I can tell you so many Dylan stories about profound, astute, adroit comments. And I said, you know, I saw you spar. And he said, you know, I did it to gain the respect of the people in the gym, and I did it for me. You know, that's kind of what Dylan does. Dylan understands and respects people, but Dylan is his own man. He's one of the most traveled Americans under 30, and that's, you know, in light of everything else he's done. So I'm very proud of him, but he's also mindful of other people, and he's not a selfish guy. He's a generous guy with his time and his, you know, his resources, and that's all part of being a real man and a good citizen of our country. He's a patriot. He's involved in policy. Joe, you could have a whole separate show on talking about Dylan, about the GDP of, or China's Bridge and Belt work and how they're stealing, you know, countries from American influence. He can get into all that things. You know, he could tell you who's the civil wars and why are we worried about Ukraine when there's civil wars and invasions of African countries, but we're not worrying about all those type of things. You know, he can go on. He can talk about politics. So he can talk to you about history. He can talk to you about wars. There's all these things that he's a full blown guy that's living his life.
So we got a minute left. I'm gonna. So if there's one priority here, and I'll say this is really important. Let's just say there's one thing at the end. It's always, now remember this because you'll be taking this over. You always pay the Labor Show sponsorship. I don't care what the hell's going on. That's some Joe Krause. Dylan, parting words. We got about a minute left. It's been awesome, meeting you and in a sense, presenting you to the Philadelphia area because, I'll say mine on the way out. Parting words.
Yeah, well, thanks, Joe, for having me on. My parting words would just be if anyone who's listening to this has been injured or disabled, not just in Pennsylvania, but in all 50 states, we can help. So feel free to call out and ask for me.
The future of pond hockey, the future of injured workers is alive and well and will be for decades and decades to come. Thanks to Sam Pond and Dylan Pond and the caring individuals here at Pond La Hockey, on behalf of Sam Pond and on behalf of Dylan Pond and Mimi Pond, I'm Joe Dockery. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.